So recording started.
All right. So this is the Wednesday, March 14th, 2018 OEMR board meeting. We'll start today with a roll call. So I heard Jit. So let's just say yes if you're present. Jit?
Yay. Yes.
I think I also heard Asher.
Yes.
Robert?
Here.
I heard Daniel.
Here.
Sherwin? Okay, no Sherwin. Lou?
Yes.
All right, Lou. Shamim? No Shamim. All right, Brady's here.
Yep.
Senna?
Yes.
Roberto?
I'm here.
Steven?
Here.
Scott Wakefield? And John Williams?
Here.
All right, did I miss anybody or was that it? Okay, and then I'm on my phone, so I can't see the participants. Do we have any guests today?
I don't see any on Zoom here. Yeah, no guests so far. There may be several that show up, but none yet.
All right. So looks like we have in today's board meeting a need to approve the previous meeting minutes from January and February. Would anybody like to make a motion to approve the January 10th and February 14th meeting minutes?
This is Brady. We should hold off. I think we're still waiting on those minutes. So
I'll have them in here by the end of the meeting. I'll post a link on the forum.
So we'll go back to that, or we'll push it to the next meeting, depending on how it goes at the end.
We have so much to talk about.
Yeah.
Let's just push it.
Let's just push it.
All right. So the next item is the financial report. I'll leave that to Steven.
Thanks, Matthew. I put a bunch of the report up on the forum, so hopefully everyone has a chance to check that out and don't want to take up too much time. But yeah, we moved forward with getting in touch with LegalZoom for some advice on how to move to a C6, and that's still in progress. So we're going to have to change the articles of incorporation, get that fixed up with North Carolina, our home state. Then, well, we'll need board approval to change it. So once I get that wording figured out, I put that in the new business section. We're probably going to have to postpone that, I guess. It's going to take a little bit of time, but yeah, things are moving in the right direction. So I just hope everyone, you know, has a chance to read that, keep up with it. It's, you know, feel free to post anything on the forum, any questions about what's going on. And I'll be happy to take any questions right now. The finances are pretty stable. There's really from the donation side, it's really quiet. Probably down to like 3 or 4 regular contributors, very loyal people. But yeah, so kind of a stagnant time with finances. And I mentioned what our few expenses were there in the report, too. So I'll turn it back over for any questions.
This is Brady. Are we tracking Open Collective stuff or not? I forgot what we decided.
No, I forgot to mention that. We'll need an update from Matthew on what's going on there. At some point, we'll include that.
Yeah, I can definitely write that down as an action item. It's very nominal, but we're getting some healthy interest lately. Actually, I think today somebody just backed us as a $5 a month backer. So we'll definitely want to count that money on the table. So yeah, I'll take that down as an action item. All right. Well, I guess a lot of what you said actually leads into the first item of the official unfinished business, and that has to deal with organizational restructuring. So we obviously are looking to convert OEMR to a 501c6 status, and any questions can go to Stephen around that. Looks like he's done a lot of work already. And I'll just high level overview, you know, what we talked about last board meeting, OpenEMR Foundation. We want to set this up as a 501c3 nonprofit. And so far, Brady, myself, Robert, John, Asher, Stephen, a whole bunch of people have been coming up with logos and mission statements and figuring out some of the legal work that we're going to have to do basically to get that registered. So again, I'm just keeping this high level, but if you recall from our last board meeting, we talked about OEMR being a 501c6. It will stay around for meaningful use reasons, because that's the entity that, you know, got the meaningful use certification for OpenEMR. And then 501c3, the 501c3 I mentioned is called OpenEMR Foundation. And that's going to be where we can apply for grants and kind of have a new fresh start, do things right with taxes, and maybe really take it up a notch for our software and community.
That sounds great. So the 501c6 sounds like when we get the wording, then we'll be able to vote that. So essentially, at some point, we got to probably vote the articles of incorporation that need to be changed. So probably either the next meeting, if we get it done really early, we could always call a quick special meeting just to vote it through. But we'll see where that goes for the 501c6 piece of what we're doing.
Yep, definitely well said. And I just want to throw this out there for OpenEMR Foundation, the 501c3, if you're interested, like, this is a great time to help, because you'll have a lot of say, you know, with the, you know, with even things like the logo and the mission statement and business plan. You know, we're really starting out fresh, so it would be definitely appreciated if more can join in. So the next topic, and if there's no questions or comments on organizational restructuring and with respect to OEMR as it stands and where it's going and the new foundation, I guess we can move on. Okay, so the next item is cloud partnership. So I'll hand it over to John to talk about some of the successes with AWS and maybe some of the new thoughts with Google.
This is John, so I have no updates, but I defer to Brady on any comments on Google Cloud Platform.
Yeah, I mean, we're basically, it's sort of in the works of trying to get something out with the Google Cloud Launcher. It's sort of comparable to, it actually is very comparable to AWS's marketplace, so that's just something in progress.
Right,
kind of the early stages.
This is Daniel. Like, with Google Cloud, two things you guys are going to use that. One is that I've always enjoyed it, and I've always heard that in developing countries, third world countries, Google Cloud has been very popular, and that dates to Google App Engine. I think still today had an always free plan, and I think Google now has the always free virtual machine instances. So I've always heard it's weirdly been more popular than Amazon. And we started using Azure at work. My God, it's so expensive. And it has all these, like, you have to pay for MFA on your phone. It's just ridiculous. But anyway, that was all I had to Google that.
Yeah, this is Matthew. I can't help but agree with you on the user interface. Like, I was blown away. This thing looks like it's from the future. But anyway, Brady and John, do you want to maybe explain, you know, just high level for everybody else to understand why we would maybe go with Google and how it helps OpenEMR Cloud Initiative?
I mean, I think basically the more options, the better. So that's essentially what we're trying to do. Azure is also an option. We could also think about getting into their marketplace too. I mean, all these cloud versions are going to be pretty much the same. It's not that tough to go from one to the other in terms of development. Now we're going to make 5 different versions like we did for AWS. You know, probably not. The goal is, and Google is a lot easier in terms of HIPAA compliance, since almost everything they offer is encrypted at rest or in motion, so it makes life a lot easier. But I think it's more just to offer, you know, some people, you know, on the forums, they want to use Google Cloud, so you have that option for them. They want to use AWS, you have that option. You have Azure, some of you want to use Azure, you have that option if possible. So I think it's just another way to increase the use of OpenEMR and the accessibility, really, is what we're doing.
Definitely makes sense. Sounds like a good fit. So I think that's all we have to report on for the cloud stuff. So next up is marketing. This is just a huge topic, and I think we've done a few things and have a lot planned, but I'll kind of give my update and then I'll let the next person give their updates because there's so many different marketing activities going on, which is great. One, I just want to call out that we did not get accepted into the Google Summer of Code program. We talked about that as a marketing thing as well as like just good for the project to get more people helping out. But the result was we did not get accepted. There was a lot of applicants and it's very competitive. Maybe next year we'll take what we learned from this year and it'll help. Otherwise, there's actually a thing, there's actually a blog that's going to be posted today or tomorrow. I'm not sure. It's for the Aspiration Bank. It's kind of like a new bank, really like easy to use and stuff. They interviewed me about, you know, why did I go to Nepal and what do I do with OpenEMR? And so, it's going to be an article about that. And, it calls out OpenEMR and everything. So we'll probably be able to retweet something. If they use Twitter, I'm not sure. So that was just good marketing, and kind of a cool experience for me because I've never been interviewed. So it was neat. And then otherwise the last bit of my marketing updates, we're working on getting, hopefully we can get this wrapped up in the next week or so, but the team is working on getting OpenEMR DICOM viewer integrated, and we can have just a tiny release of OpenEMR to get that out to users. There's a really nice press release I put together with the help of many people, and that would really shine a light on OpenEMR and our really strict focus on trying to support people that can't really use the system because there's no DICOM and PAX integration. So I've heard from a few people that like everything's great about OpenEMR, but there's no radiology module. So hopefully get that fixed up and finished, and then we'll have a nice press release and marketing campaign around it. So that's my marketing updates. I've just handed off to whoever, but I'm sure John has some stuff, and you know, maybe Robert does as well.
This is John. So we are planning some marketing efforts, although they're not solidified enough to, I don't think, discuss that in this venue. So, but in the future, for sure.
This is Roberts.
This is Lee Belcher. Can you hear me, guys?
Yes.
Yeah, this is you. I got a real quick question. You were mentioning about the DICOM. Has there been any, have you noticed any need for dental? Because remember we did that with the Coast Guard, and that's the other module that we didn't have. Has there been a lot of demand for dental the way there has been for radiology?
So in theory, the solution will work, but it doesn't necessarily come with the out-of-the-box workflow that, you know, a dentist would use. So it's kind of just like, oh yeah, you can upload a document and view it in a DICOM viewer in OpenEMR. But where I'm kind of struggling is with, you know, their workflows and what they're looking for. And maybe there's already another open source or reasonably affordable package out there that those folks use. I'm not sure. Though the people that I've heard from are folks that complain about lack of radiology support. So that's kind of where I was going with this whole thing.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, great question. And I think Robert was chiming in with his marketing updates or comments or thoughts.
I've been incredibly busy with school, so I haven't been able to put as much effort as I would like to into the social media aspect of marketing, but we did hit 1,000 followers on Twitter recently. So that's good. I try to keep an eye on it, but for about another 5 weeks, it's just going to be running around trying to survive this semester, and then I can kind of get back. I've got some things planned, but they're more summer, fall campaigns. So, but the 1,000 followers on Twitter is cool. So it's worth mentioning.
Yeah, great, great job.
And hey, this is Daniel from Austin. So one thing, I don't have a specific proposal or anything like that, but one thing I'd just like this board to start thinking about, and we talked about this at work recently, is just security and cybersecurity in general. I think right now the only real thing you can do is if you have whatever your main email is, I would implore you to enable MFA on it via an app like Duo or Google Authenticator and not SMS. But if you all are going about, this is something I used to totally ignore and think was just hyped up industry profit stuff. But just as you're going doing EMR stuff, regular stuff, just be thinking about that and enable MFA on your email. That is by far the biggest thing you can do.
Daniel, I have a quick question. The MFA, why would you not do the MSS option with MFA?
So SMS has been shown to have a few vulnerabilities. There's the crazy, like, space alien hacker, you know, Russia FSB vulnerability that, or it's theoretically vulnerable, but it's kind of crazy. The main one is just people's cell phone accounts, you know, they call in and they just ask to reset the phone number or something like that. They get your SMS. They say, hey, I lost my phone. I need to reset my phone. You know, it's not like trying to call in and get a new credit card or something. So card companies easily do it. You just need a little bit of background information. And then they get the new SIM card, put it in your phone, and now they have your phone number and can easily get the SMS code sent to them. So they're like a bunch of, at DEF CON last year, Las Vegas, you know, they had a bunch of, you know, live calls, people just calling in the cell phone companies with a pathetic amount of personal information, like an address and like not even the spelling of the last name, just the pronouncement of it. And they were able to get that. So it's this social engineering thing. And in my, right, I don't know how many of you guys are still on your parents' accounts, right? And, you know, a lot of these are older people who don't have it, you know, who have like, what is the street I live on as their security question?
No, that, I mean, that makes sense. And I guess SMS, I don't think it's encrypted either, but yeah, I can understand why. But
yeah,
because
yeah,
that's always your backup
to take an inventory.
SMS is all, like, I always like that because, you know, if you lose your MFA, like with GitHub, you can actually, if you lose your MFA credentials, you can, in theory, they'll never let you log in again, no matter what you do. I mean, even if you went to their office and said, hey, this is me. So that's why I always get worried with when you don't have a backup thing,
Yeah, so that is, there are some MFA app services that offer backup. So I think Duo offers that.
But then you wonder, like, do I want to backup all my MFA stuff to, like, I know I use Authy and they do backup, but then you kind of wonder, well, is it really smart backing up all my MFA stuff to one place? That's why I always get nervous about it. But I agree.
Okay, one example for you, Brady, that is a winner is with Amazon, because we got into this at work, is if you lose your MFA keys, Amazon has a very specific reset policy that you go through, and that's in the documentation online. So when you guys are using AWS accounts, no excuse, because you're not. And with GitHub, you have backup codes, like physical codes you print out.
Yeah, I printed those out and put them in my file, but then I wonder, well, what if you have a double hit, lose your file, and GitHub's the only one,
yeah,
I think.
That is valid, right? What if your house burns down with your phone inside because it's at night and you run outside? Then you're totally.
But yeah, no, I mean, I basically took that file, copied it, encrypted it, and put it somewhere I don't know what I did with it, but because I don't want to lose access to GitHub. But we should probably move on. But I agree, MFA is definitely an important thing to think about with all your accounts.
So. Yeah, and I think took inventory of our GitHub for OEMRs. Sorry, not GitHub, for AWS on OEMR. I think everybody has Authy or something like that to back their account.
Everyone has to have MFA with that account just because it's offering a public image, and GitHub too. We all have, all the owners are using MFA, as I recall.
Cool, got it. Awesome. So is there anybody that wants to give a marketing update on anything that they've been working on? I know that we have a lot of marketing efforts going on. And not all of them are in a nice, solid state where you could say it's done. But if anybody has any updates, that would be cool.
I guess the one big marketing tool will obviously be the next release of OpenEMR 5.0.1, which will be probably hopefully in 3 weeks. So that'll be a marketing, obviously.
Yeah, that's going to be good. And then if anybody's looking for some marketing stuff to do, I'm just going to read off some tasks that are on our roadmap. We have a previous donor analysis kind of fundraising marketing task, you know, basically look at the trends and insights that, you know, look at the trends of and background information on some of the previous donors to figure out how we can like market better to get donations. Making some sort of outreach video about OpenEMR, its mission, impact, and vision, featuring community leaders and folks in offices, you know, using it, you know, clinicians using it. It would be cool to have somebody volunteer to work on Sherwin's success story around Weno, the Weno cash card. So he put together some artifacts of his clients saying, you know, how they're using OpenEMR and Weno and it improved outcomes with respect to medication. So if anybody's interested, we have, you know, that could be its own blog post. OpenEMR on a podcast. So, you know, this would be really cool to find a good podcast for us to join. Not join, but to be featured on, talk about what we do. There's a few open source podcasts out there. So if anybody's interested in kicking that off. And yeah, of course, a bunch of fundraising things that would take too long for me to mention. But these are kind of some open marketing tasks in case anybody wants to contribute their bit.
Yeah. Hey, this is Jit. I just have a quick question, and I'm sorry, I've just been busy with client work. I haven't seen the project list, but one of the things is that practice teams is charging a lot of people looking for the EMR system, or there's a percentage of people. Is there any work being done on MIPS in terms of, you know, like, you know, some EMRs you can generate XML files for the quality category, there's four categories of MIPS. And, you know, we can use registries and other things, and there are some meaningful use measures for the advancing care information, but I just want to know if there's any efforts, because some of the people that are interested are talking to me about switching open EMR, have Medicare populations, and they're wanting to do MIPS even for the first year. Last year, it was just really easy. You didn't have to do much, but now it's, you know, the requirements got more. So
yeah, so I could I can answer the first part.
EMR, it was on market systems really well. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I can answer the first part, and I'll leave the second part probably to Steven or Lou. But basically, the response to Practice Fusion is a blog post or a landing page. We're not sure. We already wrote it. We're not sure if it's going to be a blog post or a landing page, but it's going to be entitled OpenEMR, a Great Long-Term Choice. And so this is just basically going to be a very well-formed piece talking about how, you know, with open source, OpenEMR is, you know, going to be around for the long term and you can't be charged for it. And we're just going to put a quick link to Practice Fusion's recent change in their pricing model. So that's kind of our response. We actually are kind of cleaning up some of this, the CCDA import, so that we can officially say, oh yeah, you can migrate from Practice Fusion to OpenEMR. But yeah, that's in the works. But the second part of your question about MIPS, I honestly don't have much on that. So I'll leave that to somebody else, like Lou or Stephen, maybe.
Yeah, this is Lou. Well, question on Practice Fusion. I'm just curious. You know, Allscripts is going to start charging $100. So you guys are well aware of that, right? And
that's what the article or landing page that I just mentioned will address.
Yeah, but I could try to answer a MIPS question. Can you repeat the question?
No, I'm just wondering what kind of development or work or interest is there in the community towards developing. Like, we did for meaningful use, right? In the Medicare population, at least a lot of people are going for MIPS, and some of those are some Practice Fusion users who are used to like a MIPS dashboard or an XML file being generated. Now, I understand there's different mechanisms reported. You can do a qualified data registry and all that, but I'm just wondering in terms of relation to marketing and getting new people to use OpenEMR. You know, is this a project that somebody's interested in or whatever? I mean, I can develop some resources to that, but I wouldn't be able to do the whole thing if there's some interest in working on that. I mean, there's Meetings 3 and all that. We've done a lot. It takes a lot of money to get certified. I know that. And maybe that's the question. Like, why do you even start this if you're going to need money to certify? But I don't know. I mean, that's kind of a roadblock. I mean, people don't want to pay $100 a month, but they're paying that for MIPS and prescribing everything included. And sometimes when they come to me and say, well, you know, OpenEMR, it sounds good, whatever, but can I, I don't want to get those penalties for MIPS. What do we do? And I'm like, well, you can go to registry. Whatever. We don't really have a MIPS dashboard. So again, I'm just putting that out there. I mean, I think it would help the marketability, but there is, time, effort, and cost maybe involved. I haven't had a chance to read the projects page. I don't know if it's a current project or if it's something that people are interested in joining. That's kind of what I wanted to just talk about there.
Well, okay, so this is Lou. So MIPS now, meaningful use as it applies to Medicare is sort of not used that term anymore. They're moving more toward, are you 2014 or 15 certified? And even the 2015 certifications being questioned by the new head of Health and Human Services. So just think of MIPS as everything rolled into one. Now for quality reporting, and Robert, you could chime in too. Robert knows a lot about this, but for quality reporting, there's two big dynamics going on. First is that Medicare is not going to be the only one doing quality reporting, so we have to look at how the other payers would fit into this too. So it's not just Medicare anymore. But the other big piece to talk about is that with the new head of Health and Human Services and the new head of CMS, who want to make life easier, they've been talking a lot about simplifying MIPS. And so no one knows what that means yet. So from a marketing standpoint, I think, Robert, if you have any thoughts on this, I'd love to hear them. But my feeling is from a marketing standpoint, we should really be positioning that OpenEMR will support MIPS no matter what it looks like, because MIPS keeps changing, like every time we turn around. So I don't know. What do you think, Robert?
I agree that MIPS seems unstable. That being said, their reporting mechanisms have gotten to a point where theoretically, I've been working with Lou on this, not directly tied to OpenEMR, but there's no reason why we can't do MIPS reporting straight out of OpenEMR, given the current API that CMS is offering. That is probably a big time marketing opportunity. That kind of bumps us up to the big players, the Cerners and the Epics and the whoever else I'm forgetting, Fusion, not Fusion, whoever else is out there.
Well, Meditech is getting pretty big, but yeah. Mm-hmm.
But that would be a step towards the big players. And Lou is right. MIPS kind of seems to be changing all the time. But it seems like they're at least getting a front-facing API that will be stable enough that, it's stable enough now that it's, that the public is using it to submit measures and reports back to CMS. So that's an opportunity to kind of bump up the reporting integration. Because I know a lot of that was done for MU2, but now we can even take it a step further, given some of the new technologies that CMS has applied.
Yeah.
Right. That's good to hear. That's what I thought, the open API, but I wasn't sure what you guys thought about.
This is, Brady, is the technology, is the actual reporting functionality different? Like for MU2, I know they had to build in something for the clinical quality measures and it had to be reportable. Like, is there anything... Like, can you take that report and submit it, or is it completely different now?
I'm not familiar with what the reporting was before the current iteration of the API, but technically speaking, their CMS API right now is just a REST API that you pass along a JSON file.
So it's not XML?
No, I think you can submit XML. I've never messed with XML because I think that's an outdated technology, but... you can do XML or JSON.
CMS will accept either one, and then there's this thing called, and I don't know, Robert, you could probably correct me on this because I'm probably saying it wrong, but QRDA3 is the native output of the EHRs for electronic clinical quality measures. And I think QRDA3, is that a subset of XML, or is it the other way around, where XML is a subset of that? I never understood that.
My guess is that it's the the QRDA3 is like a superset of XML. Like they used XML and kind of built out their own standards, but it's not, I mean, it's very common to have XML standards. Like you base your standards off of XML and go from there. JSON's a little funny. They don't really have those kind of standards given the nature of the format. But yeah, taking a CCDA document or a CCD or even the CDA3 right out of the EMR, it wouldn't be too difficult to just push that into the schema that CMS wants, and then we just say, hey, here you go. I mean, I say not that difficult. It's, you know, it's involved, but it's doable.
And CMS, but we do, the calculations are done on the side of the software, not CMS though, right?
No. Well, you pull the numbers, and getting to the numbers is a whole different beast. You submit the data to CMS and you do some of your stuff, but you can get scoring previews from CMS based on the data you've already submitted. But
you're not submitting like patient data. Like you're not putting in QRDA four. I think it's three, right? Where you,
no.
Okay.
You strip that down and you aggregate your data so that one NPI and you know, one provider, and then you aggregate your values for whatever measure you're reporting on.
So we need basically two things. We need one, the connection, being able to automatically submit to CMS, and then, or not automatically, push a button and it happens. And then two is we need the rules that actually create the calculations.
And that is that's the real blocker right now. I stumbled my way through getting an application talking to CMS. I stumbled through it. It was more complicated than I had anticipated. The real magic is that magic button where you say, just go calculate my numbers for me. And it's possible. It is possible because all of the measures are public data. There's a GitHub repo it's like the single source of truth for the measures. So it's possible. It's just a lot of legwork. So
it's like doing about 100 CQM rules or something, clinical quality measure rules.
Probably.
Mm-hmm. Now, I heard, I don't know how much this is going to be worth, but I'll say it anyway. I heard from a doctor who is in the town where I live, and he's very active with CMS, and he's actually met Seema Verma a few times. And one of the things that I've always noticed was that if a doctor doesn't report certain quality measures, they get their penalty letter, and the penalty letter would be worded. It would say, you could have reported PQRS for these measures and you didn't, therefore you're getting a penalty. And everybody concentrated on the emotional impact of that letter that said you're getting a penalty because you didn't report. But if you really stop for a second and listen to the wording, they know already what you should have reported. So why are they making the doctors go crazy to report something that CMS already knows what it's going to be? So I heard rumors that one of the new approaches to quality reporting with MIPS is going to be that CMS is going to tell you your numbers. We're not going to have to figure them out anymore because they already know them. And they're going to, and so the emphasis is going to move from calculating towards how do you improve and how where are you falling down and how can we help you? What can you do to pick yourself up if you're not doing the best you can. So that's not official yet, but it's being spoken about.
How do they calculate it without seeing the data?
Right now, CMS does see the data. CMS gets the claims.
Oh, they're going through the claims.
They're going through the claims, right?
But now, like blood pressures aren't on claims, so how do they?
Yeah.
Well, you can have an encounter, right? If you pick a measure and part of that measure says you should have taken blood pressure, there's going to be an encounter code in there. There's going to be an ICD code in there that when you look at a measure, it's got about an option of 10 to 20 different codes, ICD-10 in combination with encounter and procedure codes. So to get that measure, it's not just saying I took the blood pressure. It's, you know, did you, I don't know, did you, the measure could be, did you try to make your patient better with hypertension or something? And there's like 10 different things that you could have done. It's not just taking the blood pressure. There's no measure that just says, did you take blood pressure?
Yeah, and they have some quality measures with benchmarks on them, and then they have patient practice care improvement. They're one of the categories is practice care improvement. You try to get a baseline and then improve on that. And so they take the claims data, they get benchmarks. You try to go against the benchmarks and the quality data, and then they have another section where you do like practice care improvement, and there are certain types of activities you can be involved in where, you know, you can have a baseline and then improve your clinical care outcomes and then report it. I mean, that's my understanding. I don't know.
But don't forget what I said earlier, right? So as this expands to other payers, you know, the little secret way that CMS has to know what's going on because they get the claims all of a sudden isn't there anymore, right? Because private payers don't get, you know, Medicare doesn't know what private payers, are getting. So all of a sudden that little, you know, sneaky back doorway of them knowing what measures are there, once you include the private payer community, they could only make a wild guess. They could only make a statistically close guess, right? So one of the organizations we support reports on sports medicine. They're an orthopedic subspecialty, right? Now, sports medicine, people don't care about Medicare, right? Because when people get older, they break parts of their body. They typically go to a hospital. They get a replacement, and those Medicare people don't do sports. So sports doctors don't care about Medicare. They care about private pay, and they care about Blue Cross Blue Shield and all that. So one of our QCDR, well, one of our registries that are specialty basis radiology, and that we're getting a lot of business from them, but the orthopedic side that concentrates on younger people, we're hardly seeing any activity at all. So once the other payers get involved, you're going to see it really take off.
Well, thank you guys for all the information. Like I said, I'm very novice when it comes to like medical billing. So that's kind of some of the stuff that I get confused by, but I'm starting to see that it's more than just that. It sounds like there's a lot of quality reporting pieces. So I guess as we learn more, we'll try to prioritize this stuff and put together teams as best we can.
Given this is Robert, and I'll let reporting go because we've stuck on it for quite a while, but given the last few months and learning about the CMS reporting, given the opportunity to build that into OpenEMR, I would jump on it. So I think that there's some serious value in that for OpenEMR.
Yeah, I'm having a hard time just because I'm not as up to date on this piece, but you know, it's kind of hard for me to kind of prioritize at this point because, you know, we have things like the cloud and fire and, you know, radiology, we hear about these from users all the time, but, you know, I haven't had anybody come up to me and say, hey, what's going on with MIPS and quality reporting and MU3 or any of that kind of stuff. So it's a little bit more abstract to me.
You maybe haven't, but I know Lou has.
Yeah.
Very cool. Okay.
In the U.S., it's very important in the U.S. Fire is obviously, we're making that a priority because it's kind of a international thing, but definitely MIPS and quality measures and all that stuff are in meaningful use. Having a meaningful use, that's part of MIPS. These are all important things.
And there's value in multiple avenues of, you know, like there's value in DICOM and MIPS and every, you know, all the different aspects. It's good to have a diversified set of priorities. So just because you haven't maybe heard of MIPS as much as you do DICOM, there's value in both of those. So
Yeah, I think that's good feedback. I'm really sensitive to, you know, really trying to understand what the users are asking for, but I realize some of that stuff isn't going to be as obvious. Like, we're going to have to be ahead of the curve and supply the feature before the users even know they want it. So it's good. You bring up a good point.
That's Steve Jobs' old approach. Don't ever let the customer tell you what they want. If you're doing that, you're doing business wrong. You tell them
what
they want.
Yeah, and I think there's like a nice line in the middle, you know, we are going to try to go for. So that, I think that works. But anyway, don't hesitate to send out some, you know, emails or reports or whatever on the latest updates. And we can prioritize this and try to get some money together and put together a team. I mean, it makes sense to me if there's a good case for it. It sounds like you guys are sure of it. So very cool. So I guess we can move on from, you know, marketing and I think we can also move on from conference outreach, because I don't think we've had any conference outreach or any plans.
Oh, hold on.
I think Senna went to HIMSS, so he may have an update on HIMSS.
Oh, sorry, Senna. I didn't realize. I forgot about him. Yeah, sorry about that.
No problem. Thank you, guys. I didn't go to sleep. I just got back from India. Can you guys hear me?
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. I just got back from India just in time for HIMSS meeting. The good news and bad news. The good news is a lot more big companies are getting involved in healthcare. IBM had a huge one on interoperability. Everybody talks about interoperability and health analytics and the AI, artificial intelligence. So you guys just talked about the quality measure and all. And I guess icing on the cake, probably some kind of a business analytics and AI work, how we integrate with OpenEMR will be good. So compared to last year to this year, the trend is, there are lesser, smaller people. There are more bigger people involved in the conference. In the last 5 years, I can clearly see the trend. The big companies are getting involved in healthcare much more than ever before. The second thing, I did pitch a couple of OpenEMR, one to the federal government organization. Federal has a huge booth on not EMR per se, healthcare in general. And apparently it looks like maybe it's a public knowledge, they are going to go with Cerner. Is that a public knowledge? More of the VA implementation will be under Cerner?
Yes, that was announced several months ago.
I talked to the highest ranked person who made the presentation, and they are moving forward with Vista and Cerner. So I don't know what that means. So that's what they are. Coming back to OpenEMR, one of the things I told them, OpenEMR, the biggest pitch I made, I thought, I'm not a marketing guy, but whatever little I know, the advantage going with OpenEMR is customization. That's what the biggest attraction, because there are a lot more people out there, including Allscript, pitching practice fusion, and everybody else was there. So I did do my 2 cents of contribution, saying, hey, OpenEMR will be really good for customization if you guys want to do. The bad news, personally, it is my individual opinion, we should talk about long-term plan for OpenEMR on the technical side. Right now, it is all MySQL. You guys talked about a little bit about security. I do have my own concern that technology is moving faster than what OpenEMR can offer. I'm not talking about the user interface side. I'm talking about the back end. It's all MySQL, MySQL, MySQL. But what if somebody else wants to do something else rather than MySQL or migrate? I don't know. I don't have an answer. I'm just adding my views. I'm sure a lot of people will have comments on it.
What would be more secure than MySQL?
It's not security, Brady. Maybe I'm not communicating. It is a long-term vision. What happens if somebody, the new technology comes into place? It's not MySQL, it's some other database. OpenEMR is not structured to migrate to anything else other than MySQL. I'm only talking about 5 years down the road. So it may not be an issue today. So this is something to keep an eye on it. I don't have an answer, Brady. I'm just adding my views. A lot of people are using different things, different technology. If you want to do different databases, don't know. As I said, I don't have an answer. I'm only giving a problem here. So the long-term view should be not just the front end, the back end platform. You guys are already addressing it from Amazon to Google. That's good. You have a backup cloud platform, but how about the platform itself? The back end I'm talking about. By looking at the code, I asked my team, hey, look at it so I can report to the team today and the last couple of weeks, they did look at it. One of the biggest challenge they reported back to me is that database call is all over the product. So one of the requests I'm going to make, does it make any sense to look at it and maybe having a, some sort of a layer for OpenEMR to have a centralized database call? So if people wants to move from MySQL to Postgres or anything else for that matter, to do some open source, the latest technology in databases kind of a thing. I don't have an opinion. I'm just sharing my views.
Have them send me an email because there's actually only four, maybe there's five if you count the patient portal. There's only five calls that, there's five central places where calls go through. There used to be three, but maybe have them email me so we can talk about what they mean by calls and things like that.
Yeah, that's a good input, Brady.
Because I, you know, when we do have to do a setting, like when we supported, we recently added, encryption to MySQL where you can do a connection.
Mm.
So it's not that tough.
Brady, sorry for the interruption. They made it very clear, my team. Connection is centralized, but the queries are all over the places. I could be wrong. I can ask them to contact us.
Queries are definitely, you got queries.
Yeah, the connection I'm talking about, the queries. Yeah.
Well, no, it would definitely part of getting the code futurized is centralizing the classes and things like that where queries are not in the main pages themselves.
Right.
I think I know where they're saying.
Matthew did ask, hey, if any of you guys have any contribution you wanted to make, I want to volunteer. I'm not a marketing guy, Matthew, but if you guys think the technology side, if I can make a difference, when I say I am talking about the team, I love to do it. In fact, I sent a mail to some of the universities in India. I will fund the work for OpenEMR in India if anybody wants to modernize the open. When I use the word modernize, don't get me wrong. I'm not talking about the front end. I'm talking about the back end. So don't know what it is. So that's what I'm thinking.
Yeah, Sena, this is great. I'll write down an action item to get in touch with you. I have a lot of thoughts on how we can move the back end to a more modernized state.
Yeah.
Obviously, the code base is massive, and it's going to take maybe a year and a good team. But that would be great.
But I do have an excuse to make. I did a lot of work on Fire, but I lost a lot of my team members in the last 4 months, a lot of them. In fact, 80% of the team members I lost, I couldn't make progress. I just got back from India. I'm trying to rebuild the team in the next couple of months. That's my goal. Hopefully I can rebuild the team and make some significant contribution. Yeah. And I know I didn't do a good job in the last 3 months. I can tell you, simply I lost to the team.
Sena, this is Robert. I will say, real small, real quick, we have looked at, Matthew and I have developed a fairly robust plan to modernize the back end. And that includes creating a database layer to essentially abstract away anything specific to one particular database. So you can drop in whatever database you want, and then OpenEMR doesn't care. It's just going to run the queries the way it runs the queries. The trouble we found is that it's to implement that it's a bit of a learning curve for the community. So trying to get without some serious incentive, I feel like people wouldn't want to necessarily go down that route. But tag me in an email with Matthew because we've got a pretty good idea of what needs to happen to get the back end in a place that future proofs for 5, maybe 10 years, but at least over the next 5.
That'd be great. That'd be great. Basically, me being an engineer, used to be an engineer, I like to see a layer wrapper for OpenEMR so people can mug with the database interface, whatever they want to do.
Exactly.
That's what I like to see. And if you guys already have looked into it, I got a mail from my team today saying, oh, it's a monster effort. I cannot argue with them because I never looked at the code inside myself. So I told them, so tell me the difference between rewriting versus modifying. So I'm waiting for the team's mail. So this is only back end. The front end will not have any change. I'm only talking about the back end specifically on the database interface side.
Yeah, just copy me and Matthew on an email, sure, and we'll sure. bring you up to speed offline.
Okay, very good. I will do that. So having said that, overall, yes, I did talk to a couple of people. And the good news is a lot of people heard about OpenEMR. In the past, they will say, oh, what is OpenEMR? But at least they know about OpenEMR. That's a good piece of information. They all know about it. So
that's really good news, actually.
Pardon me?
I said that's really good news to hear that.
Yeah, question for you, Sana. At HIMSS, did you notice, what was your takeaway on analytics?
My God, every dog and a cat wants to play in the analytics game, believe it or not. HIMSS plays a nice game. They put all the VIPs in one hall. When I say VIP, IBM, Allscripts, Cerner, Cerner, these type of guys. Then all the new kids on the block in a different one. But all the big guys are talking big in AI. So I cannot put my finger on one customer. They are good. Everybody talks about AI. Everybody talks about it. AI, interoperability are the two takeaways from the meeting. And I see much more interoperability people all over the world coming and talking about it. So
two questions.
Yeah.
One, what type of interoperability do you see as being dominant? Is it FHIR?
They don't talk about the application. They talk about, they partner with the different groups from one guy going, they all have this hospital environment. Going from one hospital, exchanging the data from ambulatory care to the hospital, to the lab, to the medication, those type of things. So everybody can see the data. They don't talk about the implementation per se. They talk about the scenario. And they
exchange the data.
Yeah. But yeah, FHIR was there. FHIR was big last year. This year it was downplayed. I don't know why. I wouldn't say the same attention to FHIR compared to last year.
Okay, but second question, how important...
Yeah, go ahead, sorry.
How important, in your opinion, is it for OpenEMR to add analytic features? Is that critical, in your opinion, or not so much?
I think critical. I'm not a marketing guy. Based on what I have seen in HIMSS, definitely it is critical. And interoperability and business analytics, AI, all three of them, I will say the highest priority. Now, this is only the business side. I'm not talking about the technical side. How you will do the interoperability, whether you will use FHIR, whether you will use something else, whether you will migrate the data, as Matthew said, from MySQL to something else, how you see from Practice Fusion. I don't know all those things, but I'm talking about the general market requirements. So I'm not talking about the technology side. How you do, either you do with FHIR or you do with something else, people are not talking about the technology. People are talking about more on the business side.
Gotcha. Thank you.
Sure.
I'd like to add real quick as well, talking about, you know, technologies and where we're at. This ties back into marketing a little bit too. We need to have serious conversations. Whether or not we take action is a different story, but I think we need to hash out the status of blockchain, the implementations and interactions that it might have with OpenEMR, and how we can possibly integrate that into our system. I don't know, Sina, was that at all noticed at him? I know it's
the reason I'm laughing, I did not communicate that. I thought that was a little bit of a confidential information. We did implement blockchain with vSolve, not with healthcare. In general, we have a sandbox built in. People talk blockchain in big times. No one has anything. IBM has something, but no one has anything on it at this point. But absolutely, my personal gut feeling, maybe 5 years down the road, again, blockchain will dominate.
Interesting.
Yes, will dominate. That's my personal feeling. We have a sandbox. You can get an account to play with the blockchain. We don't have any customer. We don't have any OpenEMR customer or anything. I'm doing this all as a retirement project for me. So I'm doing blockchain. Already we have a sandbox, but not with healthcare.
Mm. From my understanding, it's out there and people are tinkering with it in a sandbox environment and nobody has any idea what to do with it.
Oh, that's not true. That's not true. There are people, someone also earlier today talked about security issues. Me, grown up 40 years in database field, I may be very opinionated. I'm biased with my opinion. Absolutely, blockchain will dominate. There's no question about it.
Okay.
That's my individual opinion. Because having said with my database background, distributed database, that was my thesis, what I did when I went to school at Minnesota, definitely that will do. That's one of the hidden questions I said, we will look at it at the centralized database call. If you don't have it, you cannot implement blockchain with OpenEMR.
Interesting.
That's why I asked indirectly. In fact, I sent a mail to the universities. I can fund the work if some university is trying to enhance OpenEMR to have a centralized database call. I don't have energy to do it myself and don't have time. I'm an old man.
You know, we should probably move on, but we've had a couple of people show interest, like students and even a company. And when I ask, well, what specifically are you going to do? You know, what's your, like, they'll say, well, you know, we want to try blockchain with EMR. And then I ask, like, what specifically do you want to do? And there's never a reply. So I don't think, like, people know exactly what they want to do with it.
Okay. One thing, as Robert said, and I can send a mail to Robert and Matthew. If you guys already thought about how to centralize the calls, that'd be a very good step forward. Regardless whether we do blockchain, fire, or whatever we do, I think that's a good thing because that will give a little firmer foundation to OpenEMR platform on the architecture side. That's my view again. As I said, I never did a single line of coding. I only support the people who are doing OpenEMR in my office.
Well, I think it's well said. And, you know, one of the interesting challenges of managing OpenEMR's roadmap I have is balancing architectural projects and like user-facing projects. So I'll definitely keep these things in mind. I feel like FHIR is the obvious architectural, you know, kind of work that we're doing. But maybe blockchain will be it in a couple of years. So thanks for bringing that information back from the conference. It was well reported. It looks like we're going to probably skip over a few things here and maybe talk a little bit about some of the funding that we need to vote on, I believe, for Sherwin and Jerry. Brady, why don't you dive into that?
I do have one quick question, Brad, Matthew, if you don't mind. One of the things for the marketing thing, people are asking me questions like, hey, how many downloads people do? I said, I don't have that information. Is that publicly available, Brady, or can we take that offline and talk about it?
Yeah, downloads are publicly available on SourceForge, although SourceForge broke for a while, so I don't think they haven't been accurate for the last month and a half, but
okay.
They're publicly available. It's just the more recent ones are probably not very accurate at all.
Oh, okay. I can send you my
eyes. Yeah, Senna, this is John. So I pull the data, the download data off of SourceForge on a regular basis. So I have that data and I can share it with you.
Oh, absolutely. Thank you, John. I appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Okay.
Yeah, and then I guess I'll go through the
Brady, if you don't mind giving this.
Yeah. So I'll go through. So Sherwin's, his is close to getting to the code base. He's doing the lab requisition form. I did one more review on it, just waiting some more changes. So that's close. And then Jerry's project, he wanted to have more details on his project. So basically, our goal is we decided to do it in three steps. The first step was just getting the framework into the actual code base and having it be able to communicate with HAPI, which is done, actually. So the agreement was $1,000 for each step. And that was actually the first step was paid by a private. That was already paid $1,000 to Jerry to do that. And again, that's in the code base and completed. The second step he's working on is to get the basic set of resources done to be able to import and export to HAPI and also Smart FHIR. So he's working on that now. That'll probably be ready in two or three weeks. Then the third step is to actually have it communicate with it to create an app that can communicate via Smart.
She's doing three.
Cool. Well, are we going to vote on anything, or have these already been approved?
No, they haven't been approved. So the first step, obviously you don't have to vote on it. It's been paid. So the second step would be he gets paid when it gets into the code base, and same for the third step.
Okay, so it's iterative. All right, it definitely makes sense. So if I understand correctly, we're not quite ready to vote for OEMR bylaws and articles of incorporation changes yet. So I think we're going to skip past that unless Stephen or Brady say otherwise. I don't think there was any visitors on here to raise a public or community concern, so it looks like we can end the board meeting here. So the next one will be April 11th, 2018. And thank you so much for coming. I think, Brady, if you don't mind turning off record, we're going to go in the post
meeting. For the funding for fire, so I guess we probably should have a motion that it's okay to pay Jerry when he does get his probably this, just the second step, because he may do that in 2 or 3 weeks before the next board meeting.
Yeah. I'll motion.
And a second. I'll second.
Okay. So that's in there. So it'll be $1,000 when he gets the basic resources with import export for Happy and Smart Fire. But that'll be the motion. But that's it.
Yeah, okay. And then so like I said, everybody, April 11th is our next board meeting. We always have a personal chit-chat kind of thing after the call. So if you're free, you can hang on. Otherwise, I hope you have a good night or day, depending on where you're at.
Okay, well, I'm going to say good night. This is Lou. So thank you very much, guys.
Night, Lou.
Right.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Anna.
Night, Anna.
Brady, this is Roberto. I wondering if our application for the Google Summer, the GSOC has been approved.
Oh, no, it wasn't.
Man.
It wasn't. It'll, let me, actually, I haven't turned off recording yet, so. All right,
we didn't get it.
Is the meeting over? I assumed.
Sorry, yeah, we're done. That's okay. It. We're done. Then.